When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I walk a straight line, shackled and chained. Oh, gruesome Gertie is calling my name. There is no mercy in this penitentiary. Just ask the Hill String Gang, Rango.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to Bloody
Angola,
a podcast 142 years in the making.
Complete story of America's bloodiest prison.
And I'm Jim Chapman.
And I'm Woody Everton.
And we hope y'all are having a lovely week.
Right.
Last week, we brought you Hurricane, and it was right before.
That's right.
Well, actually, it was during a hurricane when you heard it.
Right.
But we brought you that, which was obviously timing appropriate. And when I was researching a lot of stuff with that episode, I came across a document that was, you know, it was just fire, as right. Woody and I would say. And it was released by the United States Nuclear Regulatory Commission. So this is a federal commission that investigates issues as it relates to prisons when they have issues during times of stress, like hurricanes and things like that, weather-related events and other things, safety.
Yeah.
So they did a report that covered hurricanes Katrina and Rita specifically.
30 days apart.
Yeah.
Two of the worst storms ever hit Louisiana.
That's right. And there was a lot of problems with Louisiana prisons when this went down. Nobody was, you know, you can't hardly prepare for the shit that occurred. Nope. But it's their job to go in there and basically say, okay, here's the facts of what happened, and here's how you can address it and fix it. That's what they're kind of designed to do. So we're going to go through this report with you, and Woody's going to start, and we'll tell you a little bit about the history of those two storms and the effects that they had from the horse's mouth. This is from the governmental entity that investigated.
And I can tell you, from when Katrina hit, and then everybody, all the evacuees from New Orleans and everywhere else, we were inundated. We had all the shelters here, and then we never got a break. Then 30 days later, Lake Charles and all that got hit by Rita, and when we went and helped them, it was just a horrible, horrible time. But starting Hurricanes Katrina and Rita. Tropical Storm Katrina became a hurricane on the morning of August 24, 2005, and made landfall that evening near Aventura, Florida. As is typical, Katrina weakened as it passed over Florida.
Yeah.
But then achieved hurricane status again almost immediately after entering the Gulf of Mexico. By August 28th, Katrina exhibited sustained winds exceeding 175 miles per hour, with hurricane force winds extending approximately 100 miles from the eye of the storm, making Katrina one of the largest hurricanes on record. And y'all, and this thing was massive, like it took up the whole Gulf. But on the night of August 29th, Katrina showed a disruption of its eye wall, which diminished the intensity of the storm, but it further increased its size. When Katrina made landfall the next morning, it was as a Category 3 hurricane with sustained winds of 125 miles an hour, but with hurricane force winds extending outward 120 miles from the storm center.
That's unbelievable. It's just
big. And that's 120 miles in each direction.
Yeah.
Right. So Katrina produced record storm surges along the Gulf Coast, peaking at 34 feet in Mississippi. And y'all
decimated.
I saw it over there afterwards. Biloxi, Bay St. Louis, all there was nothing. Yeah. It looked like a nuclear bomb had gone off.
Yeah.
Katrina produced record storm surges, like I told y'all, and the record storm surge was the result of several factors, including the extraordinary size of the hurricane and the fact that it had weakened only shortly before it made landfall. So many of the waves that were generated had been produced when Katrina was still a Category 5. With over three-fourths of the New Orleans area below sea level, and with the forecast showing the possibility of a direct hit on New Orleans for Katrina, there was discussion of a potential catastrophe in New Orleans as early as August the 26th. It should be emphasized that most of the discussion was about direct damage from a Category 5 hurricane. Now, Mayor Ray Nagin ordered the first mandatory evacuation in the history of New Orleans at 10 a.m. on August the 28th. But for a wide range of reasons, the evacuation did not succeed in getting all the people out of the city, and hundreds of thousands of residents and tourists were still in New Orleans when Katrina hit. And y'all, just to interrupt real quick, you know, that's where hurricanes, the drink, like from Pat O'Brien's, became famous. People in Louisiana always had hurricane parties. They would just hunker down and think, oh, well, it's not going to be bad as they say it is. And, you know, and thankfully at the last second, it turned from New Orleans, but that wasn't the problem. And we'll get into it right now. So Katrina produced over 1,400 deaths in seven states. And in New Orleans, three levees failed, putting over three-fourths of the city underwater. The floodwaters were 20 to 25 feet deep in some parts of the city. And a week later, on September 6th, 60% of New Orleans remained flooded. Now,
that's unbelievable.
It is such a horrible time. And we were the first SWAT team with boots on the ground for Louisiana State Police. This was when I was still with the sheriff's office here. But we got called back because the rumors were running rampant here of people raping and pillaging and looting. And so we got Willie Grace brought us back home. But anyway, it was a bad time. There's, you know, so many calls. 911 calls from people in their attics and the water's still rising and they died and they drowned in their attics and some were able to punch holes. I had one guy tell me it came to the shelter here. He woke up. He had a wife who was in a wheelchair. He's a second story of their home. He wakes up and he goes, puts his feet on the floor. This is after the storm's passed, right?
Yeah.
And his feet were in water.
Second floor.
And he's like, holy fuck, what am I going to do? And then he said, as soon as I stood up, the water had already come up to my knees. And his wife's in the bed and she's in a wheelchair. And he was older, gentleman. He couldn't, I mean, the water's coming up. What's he going to do? So he went to his, to the bedroom window and he opened it up and he got his wife and he said, he just thought they were going to drown. And it's like, God, it's a miracle. It's a trash dumpster. Came floating by and they jumped in it and they lived.
Oh, somebody's, holy cow.
It's just horror. But so I could tell you a million stories about all that horrible shit. It was just a horrible, horrible time. But now we're dealing with all the aftermath and everything for the, I mean, people were here. They were living in the gymnasiums and all that stuff. And we had 24-hour security. National Guard was here and everything else. Well, guess what happens? Hurricane Rita comes. So Hurricane Rita was the 10th hurricane of the 2005 season and the second most powerful after Hurricane Wilma ever, right? And Rita hit Florida and then intensified over the Gulf of Mexico before making landfall near the Texas-Louisiana border. Rita had intensified to level 5, which is, that's, you can't get any higher than that, y'all, and exhibited wind gusts measured at 235 miles an hour. And it was generally one of the most intense hurricanes ever recorded in history.
Right.
And that's just a fact. And, you know, I had to go get a murder suspect in Brownsville not long after Rita came through and the interstate was still shut down and all those billboards you see and everything, all gone.
Yeah.
And anyway, fortunately, the damage caused by Rita was not as monumental as had been expected. The storm dissipated rather quickly once it made landfall, and the storm surge was much lower than predicted. On the other hand, the rural area where the eye of the hurricane hit, and particularly Cameron Parish, that's Lake Charles, y'all, Louisiana, it was very heavily damaged, and the storm surge the day before Rita made landfall did reopen some of the levee breaks in New Orleans, leading to reflooding of some of the portions of the city. Now, damage from Rita was estimated over $9 billion, a sharp contrast to the more than $75 billion of damages attributed to Katrina, that which was the costliest natural disaster in U.S. history ever. Yeah.
So you may be wondering now, what are they going to do with all these convicts and prisoners housed in all these, not only your major prisons like Angola and places like that, but also your county jail or your parish jails and city jails. So Louisiana is unusual in that almost half of the offenders sentenced to state time are incarcerated in local jails. And at the time that this occurred, state inmates totaled about 19,000 in local facilities. So almost 300 of those prisoners were housed in the Federal Bureau of Prisons. The department's total population of inmates as of January 26, 2006, when this report was made, was 35,273. So of those 35,000, 19,000 were in local jails.
Right.
Okay. So that tells you what they're going to have to deal with. That's a lot.
You're also dealing with no power and no grocery store deliveries and everything's a shit show.
Everything. So let's talk about Katrina and the evacuation of the southernmost parishes. So Hurricane Katrina, as Woody said, it passed over Florida, entered the Gulf. That was on Friday, August 26, 2005. The prisons, they start to monitor the storm and look at the forecasts that are coming out so they can figure out what to do with their inmates. Katrina built really quickly from a tropical storm to a Cat 2, then to a Cat 3 by August 27th, and landfall was predicted in eastern Louisiana. At 7 o'clock a.m. that Saturday, the department's, and I'm talking about the Department of Prisons, command staff met with the Incident Management Center, and they started talking about evacuating these jails and things like that. That same morning, evacuations started in Plaquemines Parish Prison and St. Tammany Work Release. Now, it's important to note that the southernmost parishes of Louisiana, which are Plaquemines and St. John, they are the most vulnerable to hurricanes because of their location. They have a long history of evacuating early to more northern state prisons. Mm-hmm. So they take them from those prisons and move them up some other parish way up high in the state.
Everything down there, like New Orleans. So you're talking about Burris and Boothville and Venice, where it ends. That's Plaquemines Parish. And it's only like a half a mile across, and you got a levee on one side and a levee on the other side.
Yep.
And so they know.
You just nailed it. They did. And Plaquemines Parish Prison, they actually evacuated to Washington Correctional Institution. It was 179 prisoners that they evacuated, and it was completed in less than 8 hours, as was the St. Tammany work release evacuation of 71 prisoners. Later that same Saturday afternoon, St. John initiated its inmate evacuation and three community correctional centers contacted the IMC to arrange evacuations beginning that following morning. So on early Sunday, August 28th, St. John evacuated to the Dixon Correctional Center. And there was 239 prisoners in that evacuation, and they started evacuating other areas, Lafayette Community Correctional Center and the Lafourche Work Release. St. Martin canceled its request for evacuation assistance, and the Lafayette Correctional Center finished evacuating 87 prisoners by early that afternoon. So I bring you to Sunday at 4 o'clock p.m. Katrina had strengthened to a Category 5, and strong winds had already started hitting Louisiana's coast.
I was down there. I had a camp in Chauvin. We'd gone down, recently had gone down against the flow of traffic to board up my camp.
Oh.
And which was in Chauvin, was down.
Yeah, that's way down south.
Terrebonne and Houma and all that. And I remember when it came, but we got out just in time.
Well, they're monitoring this. And of course, this hurricane meaning Katrina, already they're feeling winds. They're trying to get people evacuated, and it comes ashore at 3 o'clock a.m. on Monday, August 29th. Now, as Woody said, the storm weakened to a Category 3 just before landfall. And you'll see storms do that. Once they start making their way onto land, they'll weaken real fast, typically. Yep. So this storm veered a little bit as well, and New Orleans didn't receive a direct hit, just as you just said. So they have to start what they call contraflow evacuations. And tell people what
contraflow.
I know you know what
they came up with that, because in past evacuations they were clusterfucks, and you got one side of the interstate's totally jammed up, and the other side's totally empty because nobody's going down there, right? So on contraflow, whoever came up with this genius idea, you turn all roads, both lanes, all four lanes of the interstate, the ones going north and the ones going south, you send them all north. And so it helps to relieve some of the traffic jams.
And so, in that situation, it sounds like a great idea, but the problem was New Orleans, a lot of people didn't have cars.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And most people in the big cities like that don't. They use the public transportation. I mean, you're talking about evacuating prisoners, and I got some horror stories too, but everybody has to be evacuated. Hospitals, patients, but elderly, nursing homes, they got to get them all out. They're bedridden people.
And that's exactly right. And so that presented big problems. Communications also were a big problem.
That was horrible.
One thing that was certainly lost for actually weeks after Katrina hit was cell phone service.
Yep, absolutely.
Completely went down. So you have no community. Of course, you can't even use a regular phone.
Right.
You're just, right. There is no communication.
All the towers are down. Everything was bad. And even law enforcement communication was jacked up because they still run off of towers and stuff too.
That's right. So that was all post post landfall, I guess you could say. And we're gonna talk, or Woody's going to tell you a little bit about the evacuation of Orleans Parish Prison, yep, in particular.
Jefferson OPP. Parish. Yep. And which y'all is just was a monstrosity of a motherfucker. And I told you on last episode about going down there to get a murder suspect and they had lost him. But in the early summer of 2005, the Louisiana Department of Safety and Corrections had contacted the Jefferson Parish Sheriff's Office and the Orleans Parish Sheriff's Office to schedule a meeting to discuss evacuation plans for the two parish prisons. Now, because of scheduling conflicts, the meetings never took place. And on Saturday, August 27th, St. Bernard Parish had notified IMC that they were going to evacuate their inmate population to the Orleans Parish Prison. Oh, initial indications from both Jefferson Parish and Orleans Parish were that they did not plan to evacuate inmates. Orleans Sheriff Gusman had also been on television indicating that the parish prison would defend in place and ride out the hurricane without evacuating. By Monday evening, with more information about the extended of flooding in New Orleans available, staff in the IMC were increasingly concerned about the viability of the OPP vertical evacuation plan. At 11:45 p.m. on Monday night, the IMC received a call from the JPP, Jefferson Parish Prison, asking the Department of Corrections to evacuate all inmates from the parish prison. And within 10 minutes, the IMC received a call from the Orleans Sheriff's Office, similarly asking the Department of Corrections to help evacuate OPP. Now, the IMC made an immediate decision to use all available resources to evacuate Jefferson Parish Prison first, and then after completing that first evacuation, that they were going to evacuate OPP.
Hey, y'all, it may be moving towards the end of another summer, but that doesn't mean I can quit watching what I eat. We all know home-cooked meals are so much better for you, but you don't always have time to pull it off. But with HelloFresh handling all the meal planning, shopping, and most of the prep, it's easier than ever to get dinner on the table quick and painless. There's always new flavors to explore with an ever-changing menu of 50 recipes to choose from every week. Just pick your meals and your delivery date. It's that simple. With summer in the rearview mirror and busier days ahead, now is the perfect time to save money when it comes to your dinner routine. Skip the meal planning and grocery store lines and cut down on food waste with HelloFresh's convenient doorstep delivery and pre-measured ingredients. My favorite aspect of HelloFresh is the vast array of menu options. Look, I can burn out on eating the same things over and over again, but with HelloFresh, I don't ever run out of options. Y'all, I tried the spinach one pan chicken last week, and all I can say is my mouth is still watering. It was that good. For free breakfast for life, go to HelloFresh.com/freebloodyangola. One free breakfast item per box while subscription is active. That's free breakfast for life just by going to HelloFresh.com/freebloodyangola. HelloFresh is America's number one meal kit.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
That was a crucial decision and an excellent call. Now, Jefferson Parish Prison had approximately 1,100 inmates, while OPP was over 6,000. Also, wow. Right? So I'm telling you, it was a monstrosity. That's as many as Angola has in the whole prison. Also, with the lack of communications and the chaotic, often unknown conditions in the greater New Orleans area, both evacuations would be difficult and high risk. Now, it made good sense to avoid splintering resources or further confusing the communications. Now, the evacuation of JPP began immediately. The IMC located buses throughout the department, and they were staged at Elaine Hunt Correctional Institute, not flooded. Thus, the buses and vans were able to drive to the JPP doors, and inmates were moved in a reasonably orderly groups onto the evacuation vehicles. While the evacuation of JPP went remarkably quickly and without major incident, a number of serious issues began to surface. The department did not have enough buses to transport the required number of inmates. And with some buses already working to transport inmates back to work release centers, community correctional centers, and parish prisons in the southernmost parishes, the department had neither the internal resources nor the external emergency contacts to provide the seats needed. Now, parole and probation offices had a relatively large number of vans that could be used for transport, and they were pressed into action. A Baton Rouge school district provided a few buses, and after some time, the Federal Bureau of Prisons provided additional buses with bus drivers. Now, there were other problems associated with the buses. The department did not have enough fully qualified bus drivers, and in some cases, there were no list of emergency contacts for the qualified drivers. The department used other staff with different commercial license qualifications, but without bus certifications. I think at a point, you know, it's life or death. They really wouldn't give a fuck.
Right. Yeah. If you can drive, get in there,
get in there and drive. Who's going to give you a ticket? Right.
Right.
But the most serious issue perhaps was fuel. Both gasoline and diesel fuel became all but impossible to purchase in the immediate aftermath of Katrina. In fact, both fuel trucks and water trucks were being hijacked. And when a tanker could be arranged, it needed to be transported under armed guard. Now, Elaine Hunt Correctional did have a substantial supply of diesel fuel, but with the power out, there was no way to activate the fuel pumps. Genius, right? Yep. So portable fuel pumps were not available, and there were no other backup plans. FEMA had taken control of most of the available fuel, but had not decided how or where it would be dispersed. Fortunately, Colonel Civilla had a personal contact in the State Department of Agriculture, and he was able to arrange fuel for the department on an informal and personal basis. The remaining problem with the buses, as well as with other vehicles that were used for transporting prisoners and civilians, was the lack of identifying characteristics. Vehicles were not numbered or uniquely identified in any clear manner. As a result, when a bus broke down, it was not certain what kind of bus the police or the correctional staff should look for to give assistance. Institutions receiving inmates were not sure how many buses were due to arrive or which buses. You know, they didn't know y'all. And eventually IMC staff went to an office supply store and simply purchased materials to put numbers on the vehicles. And once each vehicle was identified with a distinct number, the evacuation became easier to track. Now, as the evacuation of JPP progressed, the original plan to transport the evacuees to a number of different prisons around the state was revised. And the first group of inmates brought from JPP was taken to LSP and to Elaine Hunt Correctional, LSP, y'all be in Angola, and Elaine Hunt Correctional Institute, and to Louisiana Correctional Institute for Women, or LCIW. The situation with buses and vans leaving Jefferson Parish Prison for different locations and then returning to JBP meant that vehicles were everywhere, processing the inmates at the receiving institutions with little in the way of records or identification was also proven very difficult.
Oh, wow.
Right? Could you imagine you could just, I mean, you know,
you don't know who you're taking in.
And you know, the inmates were trying to fucking help the motherfuckers.
Like, oh, yeah.
You're in murder charge. You'd be like, no, I'm in for jaywalking. I'm due to be released, right? But all the records were destroyed. Yeah. So, and there's no computers up running and all that shit. But the strategy was changed, and Elaine Hunt Correctional was identified as a single staging area where inmates would be received, processed, and then held until such time as the department could move them to other institutions. That held true for male inmates and female inmates. Both were sent directly to LCIW. Now, miraculously, the JPP evacuation of 992 male inmates and 120 female inmates was completed by 10 p.m. on Tuesday, August the 30th, which was less than 24 hours after the phone call asking for assistance had been made. The evacuation produced no escapes and no serious injuries to staff or prisoners. Now, the inmates evacuated from JPP were complaining of thirst and hunger, and they were generally scared. The vast majority of the inmates were extremely grateful for the evacuation and were cooperative. In turn, the department tried to arrange water on all transport vehicles. I mean, you got to do it. Yeah. Right? You got to treat them like fucking human beings. But water was even in short supply, water. But during the time that JPP was being evacuated, the department was conducting other smaller evacuations. At 7:15 p.m. that same Tuesday night, a convoy of 49 probation and parole and headquarters vehicles were sent to pick up approximately 300 civilians walking wounded from a triage center in New Orleans. These individuals had been triaged and found to need medical care, but not ambulance transport. The triage center had no way to transport them to Baton Rouge for treatment, and so the task fell to probation and parole. The motley convoy included some probation and parole transport vans and some state sedans, but it also included employees' personal cars. All the drivers in this convoy were probation and parole staff. Now, by 10 p.m. Tuesday, August 30th, the convoy had loaded the 300 injured civilians and was en route back to Baton Rouge. Probation and Parole Director Jeannie Powers called the IMC to have them contact the Pete Maravich Assembly Center and convey the New Orleans Police Department request to accept the injured civilians. The second part of the medical convoy was en route to the Pete Maravich Center when, just after midnight, the IMC was notified that one van had run out of gas and was stranded at the side of the road. It took a few more hours to locate and get assistance to the disabled van, but eventually all of the injured civilians were successfully delivered to the Pete Maravich Center. By this time, the department had also completed an evacuation of one of the state's juvenile facilities. That was also conducted successfully and without incident.
Wow. And y'all, the PMAC is where LSU plays basketball. Right. Very, very big center here in the Baton Rouge, Louisiana area. Yep. So,
hey, let me real quick. The other thing that, and probably one of the last to be evacuated, were pets, because you couldn't bring them on the buses. Yeah. Which they left behind. They actually had convoys go down and herd up all the pets and bring them to LSU to
the vet school.
That building where they had the book sale every year, they used books.
Oh, yeah.
And it had it slap full, and people volunteered. Yep. And people later on, as months would go by, would come back looking for their pets and shit.
Wow. Yeah. Interesting. Well, so buses and vans, they start becoming available, and they finally complete that JPP evacuation. And the situation at OPP, Orleans Parish Prison, was nothing like the straightforward evacuation of JPP.
Shit show.
The problem was Orleans Parish Prison was flooded with water up to 5 to 8 feet deep around the building. It took several hours for department officials to find a route by which they could even bring buses and vans close to the Orleans Parish Prison without having to drive through flooded areas. The situation was further complicated because staff families who lived in flooded areas of New Orleans had to come to the jail for safety. So the jail flooded after, you know, Metro New Orleans did. So the problem was, all these people who worked at Orleans Parish Prison, they go to the prison to escape their house flooding, and then the prison starts flooding.
Absolutely.
Some civilians that were not even associated with the jail but saw it as a possible place to go from the floodwaters, they assembled around and in the jail as well. Now, the situation inside the jail was bad, to say the least. Yep. Inmates on the first floor had been in rising, badly polluted flood water until they were moved to higher floors. So as that water started to come up, they started moving them up the tier, right? Yeah. The fuel tanks for emergency generators were in the basement. So when the flood waters reached the jail complex, the main power and emergency power both went out. There was no power. That means no lights, y'all.
No lights.
No running water. No operable toilets.
Nothing.
Nothing.
No air.
No air. Yeah. And no no emergency power at all. So it's hot. It's stinky. You can't see in front of you.
You can't even see your hand in front of your face.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Now, there's a great deal of controversy, and this is according to this report, about how bad the conditions were within the OPP from Monday when Katrina hit until Thursday when the evacuation was complete. So it took 4 days right. to evacuate them after the storm hit. The questions of conditions within OPP and what the OPP staff did or did not do outside the scope of the charter of this report. And so they didn't get into that. Basically, they weren't going to get into a he said, she said. Now, there were two immediate challenges to evacuating. The first was getting the prisoners out of the jail buildings, and the second was transporting them through the floodwaters to an overpass that was directly above a portion of the highway, which was itself accessible to buses and vans without flood water. For the first part of the task, a cutting torch had been used to cut the bars off the upstairs window, and female inmates were brought out through the window and then climbed down to ground level and the boats. So see, even prisoners, females first, right? They got some manners. That's it. An impromptu scaffolding was also erected to allow inmates. Yeah. Now, y'all imagine this. Yeah. These are inmates. They're in this jail, and basically they build a scaffold, and they say, all right, all of y'all climb down. It looks like a big, massive escape, right? So the inmates climb down from the upper levels to the lower levels. Now, the second problem, the solution was to transport inmates 4 to 6 at a time. 4 to 6 at a time, y'all. These are thousands of inmates.
6,000.
From OPP to the highway overpass in small boats. The State Department of Fish and Wildlife, they arranged for a few boats, but for much of the evacuation, the department purchased 3 flat-bottom boats with 60-horsepower engines. Each boat was capable of transporting 4 to 6 inmates per trip. The department tried to rent or lease a party barge, which would have made a much shorter work of the evacuation, but they couldn't make arrangements. 2 private individuals later offered the department airboats, but the transport from the OPP to the highway overpass remained very slow.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The evacuation was substantially aided by the tactical teams brought in to New Orleans from Louisiana State Police by, Louisiana State Prison, which is Angola, by Warden Kane. Yeah. They performed a wide variety of security functions, and we've told y'all about that in the past.
CERT team, yeah.
Yep. So at OPP, the general procedure where possible was for TAC teams to go into the building and frisk inmates and then send them out on the boats. At one point, IMC received a call that the state police were reporting that inmates had taken over the armory on the 10th floor of OPP. Yeah. And that there was a firefight in progress. That information evidently, get this, y'all, reached Washington, D.C., because there was a second call from Washington saying 3,000 prisoners were holding hostages and had the armory and controlled OPP. Those reports turned out to be totally without foundation. However, they were not the only misinformation conveyed during this emergency.
It was such a shit show. All the false rumors and shit.
100%. And one person heard that one prisoner did something and it became 3,000. Yeah. So at 11 p.m. on that Tuesday, the IMC decided to stand down the convoys overnight because of the fatigue on the part of the bus drivers. Look, they're tired. They've been going back and forth all day. And continuing security concerns in the area of OPP. Buses, vans, and other vehicles were told to complete their current trip and then stop, and that the transportation will resume at 5 a.m. that Wednesday. Some of the buses and vans that had been making medical trips were able to bring civilians back to Baton Rouge with that last trip. Now, with the long delays in waiting for the JPP evacuation to be completed and then finding a route for buses and vans to approach as close as possible to OPP, the evacuation of the building had gotten substantially ahead of the transportation of those inmates. The overpass was being controlled by probation and parole staff, and one of the officers called the IMC to report there were 3,000 inmates on the overpass getting contained by 30 officers.
What?
30 to 3,000, Woody. I don't like them numbers.
Yeah, and you're stranded.
You're stranded? Yeah, you ain't going nowhere.
You're going nowhere.
There was also a large number of civilians in the area that presented additional problems for the parole and prison staff. Some of the civilians were angry that the department was evacuating inmates and refusing to evacuate civilians. Some of the civilians were sick, thirsty, or otherwise needed medical care, and it was an emotional scene. One mother approached officers with her daughter and said that her daughter had been repeatedly raped the night before and asked that they take her out of the area to Baton Rouge. Another woman approached officers with small children and a baby in her arms and said that her baby was dying. The family was put in a vehicle and transported to New Orleans, but the baby did in fact die en route.
Yeah, sad.
In addition to those kinds of extraordinary and traumatic experiences, many of the staff who worked in New Orleans in the days after the hurricane saw dead bodies lying untouched on the ground or floating in the floodwaters where they themselves were waiting.
True.
The floodwaters were also fouled with human feces, dead animals, and others, pollutants. It was altogether a hellish scene.
Horrible. And this is just fucking the worst time ever for everybody, you know? So, the officer calling in from the overpass requested food, water, and MREs. Y'all, that's meals ready to eat that the military uses. Comes prepackaged.
They're pretty good.
Yeah, they are now. They sucked when I was in. But at one point on the overpass, a man who may have been mentally disturbed, angry, or distraught, walked straight towards the probation and parole officers who were holding shotguns. He ignored the verbal commands to stop. No one fired, and he eventually walked through the group of staff and kept walking. It ended up as simply one more strange and disturbing incident, but could have easily resulted in a fatality, right? So the evacuation was greatly assisted when Warden LeBlanc had the creative idea to bring scaffolding from one of the institutions and erect the scaffolding from the first lane of the freeway below up to the overpass above. That idea worked remarkably well, and the prisoners were able to climb from the overpass to the highway in the waiting evacuation vehicles. By Wednesday morning, there was a continuous cycle of about 5 hours in duration, which would move 450 to 500 inmates per convoy from the overpass to Elaine Hunt Correctional Institute. As the evacuee population at Elaine Hunt grew towards 3,000, the institution began to have serious trouble, and the department redoubled its efforts to move evacuees out of the prison into other facilities at the same rate as they were being processed into Elaine Hunt's. And for the next 2 days, there was a relatively continuous cycle of convoys from Orleans Parish Prison to Elaine Hunt's Correctional, and then back to OPP for more evacuees, and a second continuous cycle of convoys from Elaine Hunt's to other prisons across the state. The Warden Kane requested portable night lighting and additional tactical teams to support the OPP evacuations. Both proved important, and it's well beyond the scope of this review to describe the OPP evacuation fully or in complete detail. Challenges, problems, individual and group acts of heroism, and life-threatening situations are not recounted here. Some because of the lack of knowledge of the incidents on the part of the authors, and some because of the time and space constraints. For example, at one of the OPP buildings, inmates were in control of the second floor and above and had gone down a stairwell to the first floor. They were separated by a single door from the administrative first floor area where staff families had taken refuge. The Louisiana Department of Public Safety and Corrections staff opened the stairwell door, fired a warning shot to force the inmates back to the second floor, and were able to establish a relatively safe evacuation procedure for the building. How close was that situation to an incident that would still be featured in national news had it occurred? Very close. The most amazing thing about the JPP and OPP evacuations remains the bottom line. Over 7,500 prisoners were evacuated in 3 days out of the nightmare conditions to multiple locations more than 60 miles away with no loss of life, serious injuries, or escapes.
That really is That's amazing. Pretty fucking amazing,
right?
When you think about it,
drastic times call for drastic measures, and you improvise, adapt, and overcome. And if you're going to escape, you're fucked anyway, right?
Yeah,
there was no water,
nowhere to escape to.
And I mean, people don't realize or think about and talk about the floodwaters coming up. Fucking snakes came up. It's alligators come up. Rats come up. It's just bad. They were, and I need to get Matt Potan on one day because he built some kind of infusion center now, but he was with NOPD and he was my partner back in the day. And he was in OPD during Katrina, and he talked about him tying bodies to like street signs to keep them floating off and stuff. It's just horrible. And
it was.
Yeah.
Well, we'll cut this one off right here, and we'll wrap this up next week.
Yep. Yeah.
We'll pick out some highlights of it.
Yeah. Interesting. I think facts. It's more interesting to me because it gives me like mental flashbacks. Yeah. Yeah. I lived it.
Yeah.
You lived it too. Yeah. As a civilian, and it was a shit show everywhere. And boy, did we get fucking lucky last week.
Well, no kidding. Very lucky. Yeah. And you know, my memories of that event, my daughters were born during Katrina. Yeah. And I distinctly remember, and I've said this before, but sitting
for that.
Woman's Hospital. I was right after they were born. Of course, there's like an hour there. The husband's got to get out and they take care of the wife, get pain under control. And I went to the top of the parking garage at Woman's, and I looked up in the sky, and there was nothing but helicopters. And they were flying all the babies from New Orleans that had been born. to Baton Rouge's Woman's Hospital, and it was like a traffic jam. There were probably 20 helicopters. One would land and it would take off. Another one would land and they would run and grab them babies. And it gave me like goosebumps just watching it. Cause I was like, man, these are, you know, this is real
people.
Yeah.
And real life.
Literally it was 2 days after mm-hmm. Katrina that Wendy went into labor. Yeah, so we didn't have electricity for the. I think Katrina brought it on.
Babies, huh?
Yeah,
I guarantee you one thing: Katrina and Rita brought on a lot of babies 9 months after.
Oh yeah,
because all the power was out.
Ain't but one thing.
Nothing else to do.
All right, on that thought. Until next time, I'm Jim Chapman.
And I'm Woody Everton.
We are your host of Bloody
Angola,
a podcast 142 years in the making,
complete story of America's bloodiest prison.
Peace.
I walk a straight line, shackle and chain. Oh, gruesome Gertie is calling my name. There is no mercy in this penitentiary. Just ask the Hill String Gang, Rango the Three.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.